When you think about what your goals are in the future, if you want to be financially independent, you want to have more time, wealth, those kind of things. And if that's a priority for you, I mean, then certainly real estate is a way to do that and is a good option.
Welcome to the Physicians and Properties Podcast, the show where we teach you how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want.
Doctor.
Now, here's your host, Dr. Alex Schlow.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Physicians and Properties Podcast. Today, we had an amazing guest. Dr. Jelleri Stenbakken joined us today on the podcast. She is an anesthesiologist who's achieved financial freedom through real estate investing. And it's been really cool talking with her and learning more about her journey. She was actually working 70 to 80 hour weeks as an anesthesiologist for her first few years out of practice. And she realized that she was teetering on the edge of burnout and she wasn't getting the opportunity to spend time with her family like she desired. So she decided, hey, this would be better for me, better for my family to cut back my work hours, make a little bit less money, but ultimately get to spend more time with the people who mattered most. And she was able to do this through real estate. It was really cool hearing about her journey buying long-term rental properties and then pivoting to short-term rentals, both in Colorado and the Smoky Mountains. And she also got to the point with real estate investing where now she can go per diem, where she is going to work when she wants for as long as she wants in 2024. What an incredible opportunity. And this was a great conversation. Her and her husband, Eric, also work together in the real estate investments. And so we talk a lot about what makes a good partnership and how you can get your spouse on board. So if that interests you, this episode will be incredible. If you gain something from this episode, please like, subscribe, share this podcast with someone who you think would benefit from it. All right, let's get started. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Physicians and Properties. So excited to have another podcast here with an incredible guest, Dr. Jelleri Stenbakken. I think I said your last name wrong. Stenbakken is here with us. Yeah, I'm sure it probably gets messed up all the time. Unfortunately, I apologize. My last name as well gets butchered all the time. But I'm so glad that you're here, Jelleri, and really excited for this conversation. How are things going?
Very well. I guess in the large scheme of things, well, things are going well.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Thanks for inviting me on the show.
Well, thanks for coming. I appreciate your time and glad to have you here. We just love to just kind of start things off with your story, your journey into medicine and real estate, as much or as little as you want to tell. I'd be really happy to hear.
Okay, sure. Well, when I was a child, I always wanted to be a physician, and both my parents are actually physicians. And so that was kind of my trajectory. I did go through college and I was taking a degree in medical technology. And because I wasn't really sure if I wanted to continue to go into medicine, and I wanted a degree that would be marketable, that I would actually have a job after I graduated instead of just a degree in biology. And so I did graduate with medical technology degree. And at the time, I thought 8 years of medical school residency, that just seems like a really big commitment. And so I decided not to do that. And so I also happened to get married right after I got out of college. And I worked for 3 years as a medical technologist. And then I felt that I really wasn't enjoying my career very much. And so I actually went back into medicine. So I think it was just one of those things where I just knew it was going to take time and sacrifice and that I felt like it was worth doing it. And I really enjoyed being in medicine. I'm an anesthesiologist. And so I've been doing that for 20 years now. And it's been a great career. I've enjoyed working with the people that I work with, and it's just been very rewarding. And I should say, too, that during this 20 years that I've been working, I have not actually been working full time. The first 3 years I worked full time and it was 70 to 80 hours a week.
Wow.
It was really too much.
Yeah.
It was a lot for my family and I had a young family. And when I had the opportunity to change jobs, change location, when I started that position, I had requested to be part time. And so I gradually just became more and more part time. And now I'm currently 0.6 FTE. So it was a matter of choices to make what I wanted to spend my time doing. And part of that was I wanted to spend time with my family And I knew that I was going to burn out pretty quick if I continued on the trajectory I was on. And so that was just a life choice. And because we intentionally did that, we also knew that we had to be more careful about budgeting and about our finances. And so in terms of the real estate, how we got started was we were just at a point where we were trying to think about, we were going to move to another city where I had my new job, but it was only 30 minutes away and we were looking for a house to build. And we ended up purchasing some land and we thought, oh, we're just going to build our house. It's going to be our dream home. And in 2010, after we sat on this piece of land for several years, we realized we don't really want to build a dream home. And so we had been saving money for that house for the deposit and to get started on that. And instead, we put it into real estate because there were some people who we were in contact with who are real estate investors that made us think about, well, what really do we want? Do we really want a McMansion? Do we want a 5,000 square foot house? Not to say that there's anything wrong with that. It just wasn't our priority. And we decided, why don't we see what this real estate thing is about? And so we ended up buying our very first long-term rental in 2010. And, you know, we didn't really know a lot about cash on cash. We didn't know about cap rate. We didn't know about the 1% rule. We just ran the numbers and we were like, oh, we're going to be a few hundred dollars ahead. So let's just go for it. And that's what we did. And the first time we started with the rentals, we were self-managing and we realized, wait a second, we're actually generating some income and these people are paying for our mortgage and in about 20 years, which is what our mortgage was, it's going to be paid off and all of that money, aside from expenses, is going to be cash. And so we thought, well, let's do it again. That's how we started. We just started getting one house after another and we would just save up money for the down payment. And so we ended up getting 5 long-term rentals within a span of 2010 and 2012. And of course, those houses were under $200,000 at the time. Okay. You know, sometimes I think people say, well, when did you get started? And I say, well, I started when I was in 2010. And they all say, oh, that was so easy then. I mean, you were so lucky you were able to get in then. But at the same time, it's kind of like, no, it wasn't easy then. It was the same as every year. People are trying to decide what to do and is this a good time to buy? And some people sit out and some people don't sit out. And we decided we're not going to sit out. And that's how that happened initially.
Wow. Yeah. There, a lot to unpack there. That's a great journey. And, you know, I think going back real quick, I did have a question. When you decided you needed to work part-time and you wanted to focus more time with your family, was that difficult for you to acknowledge and to admit? I know sometimes physicians, we have like this, almost this like stigma or concern of like, hey, I can't work part-time or, you know, folks are going to judge me if I work part-time. Was that hard for you at all? Or was it something that was pretty easy?
I think that it wasn't that hard for me because I was an older physician and I started medical school when I was 25. I didn't finish until I was 33. And by then I was like, these are the things that I want in life. Yeah. And so I had enough of a hard time during that full-time practice, those 3 years, that I really didn't want to work full-time anymore.
Yeah.
And so it took a toll on my marriage and it took a toll on the time I spent with my kids. And so I wasn't willing to sacrifice that. And I just decided, you know, whatever it's going to take is what I'm going to do to make this work. And, you know, for us, I don't have to have all the things. I'm not a person who's a big consumer. And so it isn't that I'm missing anything, really. And it was just more important for me to spend time and be present for my family.
Yeah, absolutely. The only two people who are the only people who are going to remember that you missed dinner, missed bedtime, showed up late is the kids and your spouse. And the patients don't care. The healthcare administrators don't care that you're there working 70, 80 hours a week. And that time with family is just so important. And I think sometimes that gets missed because we've spent all this time training and going through residency and we love taking care of patients that mm-hmm. sometimes our family takes a hit. And so I'm glad that you realized that after a couple of years. I mean, 70 to 80 hours full-time, long-term sounds miserable. And so I'm glad that you realized that. And I'm sure your family was really appreciative of that extra time with you as well.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that too, that there's some expectations that people might have of physicians. And I think you don't owe those people their expectations. I mean, you have to do what's right for you. And sometimes to the detriment of your own health, we end up sacrificing to serve. And some of that needs to be, you know, that needs to be controlled and needs to be really considered, carefully considered when you're, when you're working.
Yeah, completely agree. It's the work-life balance often gets skewed towards work in the medical field. And it's an honorable thing that we get to do. And it's an amazing thing that we get to do, but it's hard. It really is hard work.
Yeah, truly. Yeah. It's been a blessing. I mean, I truly have enjoyed my career. And the reason why we are in the position we are, where we have financial freedom, is also because of the income that I did generate. Mm-hmm. And even part-time at 0.6 FTEs, I'm still the primary income earner in our family.
Yeah.
And we used the money, the savings from my income to pay for the properties that we purchased. And so it's been very good for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, talking about the properties that you purchased, so that first long-term rental you bought in 2010, what was that like? Were you guys really scared about making that purchase, excited? What did that feel like? Do you remember?
Yeah, well, we were a little nervous, and at the same time, we were excited about it because we, like I said, we had people that we were in contact with who are real estate investors. And the other thing was we played this game. You may know about it. It's called cash flow.
Oh, yeah. Cash flow quadrant.
Yep. Yeah. And then the game is where you're ran a rat race around on the outside circle. And then once your secondary income or secondary stream of income exceeds your expenses, then you get to go into the middle. And then the income just multiplies and you just generate a lot more income. And we thought, well, if this is how this works, we're just doing it wrong. We're just working and saving and working and saving and hoping that someday, you know, the investments in the stock market is going to be enough for us to retire. And here it was saying you can generate other income passively or actively, but as a secondary stream that you can generate even while you're not at work. And so we decided, you know, that's what we're going to do. And fortunately for us, we've been very blessed. And we've been able to cash flow those properties, did really well, and they've appreciated quite well. And I should say, we didn't keep all of them. We did end up selling three of them later on. And basically, we've been using leverage and the rental income to just continue to buy real estate.
That's awesome. Yeah. So your houses are buying you houses and probably more cash flow, because I know more of your story and we'll get into that for sure. But that's really cool to see. And that snowball effect of you bought one and then you got to five really quickly. And I know you didn't stop in 2012. I know that there was more. So what came next? What came after those five long-term rentals for you?
Okay. So after that, life was going well. You were generating income with the rentals, and then I was still working and my husband was working in video and photography. And then in 2014, I ended up getting breast cancer. So it was stage zero. So that was great. And I ended up having to go to surgery, but I didn't have to have chemo and I didn't have to have radiation. But you know, when something major like that happens, you start considering, what do I really want in life? What is it that I want for my future? And at that time too, you know, when there's the point where you get that diagnosis and then you have to go to surgery, but they haven't gotten your final pathology back, you think that, you know, this could be worse than what they said it was going to be. And so you start thinking, this could be a life or death situation. Yeah. And so those things, when that happens, you start thinking about what is it that's important to me? And at the time we started thinking about that. And then my husband had like shoulder surgery the following year. So we were recovering from life and from health circumstances. But in 2016, we started thinking about, what do we want? And my husband has always wanted a house in the mountains. And so, but he wanted a cabin like in the wilderness or just out somewhere else, somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And he was talking about living off the grid and, you know, and I didn't really feel like I wanted to do that. And so I kind of let him shop for land and I kind of let him look for things, but I wasn't really very encouraging about it. And so I can speak to partner alignment for that. I was not in alignment. And so I didn't discourage him, but I was maybe a little bit passive aggressive about that. But then when we started thinking about what do we want, and he still was insistent on getting a place that would be a legacy property. And I said, okay, well, let's look for a place where we could live. And I said, but I need to have running water and I want electricity. I don't want to be composting my waste. So let's figure something out. And so we just happened to think about a time where a friend of ours invited us to Grand Lake, Colorado in the wintertime, and we went snowshoeing. It was gorgeous up there. And so we decided, let's go take a look there. And so while we were planning on going shopping there for this vacation home, we happened to see a short-term rental there and we really liked it. And so we contacted the owner, the host, and we said, hey, we really like your place. We're thinking about maybe getting one. Maybe we'd like to stay at your place. And it came up in the conversation that they were actually living in Fort Collins. Oh. And so we live in Greeley. And so we said, well, do you mind? Could we take you out to dinner? And you know, wherever you want. And we just have a couple questions. Would you mind sharing your experience with us? And they were very gracious. And in fact, we're friends. We're still friends. And we meet up occasionally. And so we went to dinner with them. And they just basically told us, well, this is how we started. They didn't give us, you know, specific numbers or anything. But they said, this is how booked we are. And we started mentally, you know, thinking about, well, how much does that generate? And then we figured before the entree was served that we were going to go ahead and buy something, because why wouldn't you buy a vacation home that then could be rented out and that would be supplementing your mortgage payments and could either break even or even make money? It's like, that was a no-brainer. So that's what we did. We started with that house and we still have it. And it went so well that the following year, we found a piece of land in town and we had a house built there. So we have two properties in Colorado that are in the mountains. And then the prices got too high. And so it just priced us out of the market. So we ended up having to go elsewhere. So that's what we did.
That's very cool. Yeah, we love Grand Lake, Granby, that whole area. Mm-hmm. That end of Rocky Mountain National Park is way less people and so beautiful. Yes. And my wife and I talk about it often. We're in Colorado Springs and we talk about, I also want the cabin in the wilderness off grid. My dream, honestly, at some point in life is I would love to build a very rustic cabin off grid somewhere on the water near a national park or in a national park that friends can just take their kids up to and just have a time to just get completely disconnected from everything and just be out in nature. And I feel like we learn so much and grow so much in nature. And we're just so connected these days in technology that we miss out on that opportunity. But man, what a beautiful area Grand Lake is. We absolutely love it as well. That's really cool. And what a good compromise too. I mean, you got running water, I would imagine, and the electricity and Eric got the cabin in the mountains.
Cool. Now we have two of them. So anytime I walk into my vacation rentals, I'm just like amazed and feel so fortunate to have them. And several of them are actually quite nice, much nicer than our primary home. I'm not saying that my primary home is terrible, but it's just, I don't have indoor pools in my primary home.
Yeah. I mean, our primary home is the worst furnished, at least nice property that we own as well, but that's how it goes. And we're okay with it as well. Even our basement apartment is nicer than our house that we have.
Well, it's not, I mean, our home is our home.
Right.
It isn't necessarily a liability, but then it isn't exactly an asset in terms of generating incomes. It kind of gets left behind. The others get more of the priority treatment.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, how, if you don't mind me asking, or if you're willing to share some of the numbers, how did those properties in Grand Lake, how did they do, you know, those first few years in terms of rental income and so forth?
Well, you know, for the first house, I can say that it's generated some income. We didn't buy it specifically as a vacation rental. So we weren't looking for that kind of gains. I would say that In general, I think we probably hit about 10% cash on cash for that. And then the other house, the bigger house, it's a 5-bedroom in Grand Lake. I would say it's probably closer to, I would guess, 13%, or I would hesitate because there's some numbers that are changing in that because we actually ended up paying that off. The bigger house was paid off because of the sale of the 3 houses, the long-term rentals that we did earlier. It was part of when we did a 1031 for 2 of them, and then we sold one outright just to take care of debt. And in the process, we also bought our next short-term rental, which was in Pigeon Forge. And so we've been kind of moving money around. So it gets a little fuzzy with how much income we're generating. So yeah. I'm sorry, that's not very exact. But
no, that's okay. That's still a great answer. And you guys, it sounds like we're also using the home from time to time as well. Mm-hmm. So you're benefiting from that. So kind of a cool lifestyle investment for you guys too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say also that there was a year, like 2018, there was a considerable drop in income in Grand Lake for my first home there. And I think it was because there was a little bit of a boom in terms of short-term rentals that came on the market. And so there was a little bit of a drop there in income. And so that, in that sense, it did not, the projections for that year was, it was behind. So, and that's why we also kind of transitioned out of Grand Lake and chose to move money around in order to purchase property in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
So why did you guys pivot to Pigeon Forge? What do you guys like about that market?
Well, it just has to do with the math, because mm-hmm. we specifically were doing this as an investment play. And so we initially, for those 2 properties that we were doing short-term rentals on, we actually had a company who was managing the booking reservations. And so they managed several thousand places in the United States. And in fact, now they've grown so big that, I mean, they've really grown. And so we no longer work with them. We left them in 2020. But at the time in 2019, when we purchased the property in Pigeon Forge, we had actually talked to an analyst at the company. And we said, you have a lot of short-term rentals that you book for. Where would you recommend that would make the most income? Because, you know, if we do good business, you have good business. And so they said, well, okay. So we talked to the analyst and he said, okay, well, these are the 10 places where we generate the most income and you should consider buying something in those areas. And so we just went through the list and we felt like Pigeon Forge made the most sense for us. And just because it's a common destination, and that I think someone said that 2/3 of the U.S. can get to it, and by just to travel there, and so 14 million tourists go there, and also short-term rentals there are pretty common. That's just pretty standard. They've been doing that for years. They didn't always call it Airbnb or, you know, Vrbo, but they had people who were renting cabins there. And so we felt like it had good infrastructure and that we knew that we would, even though it was going to be long distance, that we would have the ability to find people who would be able to take care of the home instead of us.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Yeah. And say from a regulation standpoint as well, which I know folks are concerned about. I wanted to hit on one point you made that I think is really important and such a great idea, reaching out to those property management companies, because they do have all that data to figure out, hey, what's reasonable and what does the market look like? I think that's something I hadn't thought about that until you said it. What a wealth of information that's right there and available for you. And they probably would be willing to share that quite often because they want you to buy property, use them, and all succeed together. So that's a really cool point for folks who are looking at different markets to reach out to some of these bigger property management companies and see what markets they're investing in, frankly, or are operating in.
Yeah, and you should definitely do that when you're considering. If you already know the market that you're in, you can interview the property management companies there because potentially you might be hiring them. I mean, we didn't hire a property management company just because we knew that they charge 20 to 40%. Yeah. And you know, when they do that, that pretty much takes away your profit margin. I mean, which is fine too, if you want somebody to handle it and you just get some of the passive income, or it's just a matter of, you know, you want that property and then eventually it'll get paid off. I mean, you just have to figure out what your future goals are and how you want to handle that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, self-managing, you know, there's so much technology and different things that you can leverage to set up systems to make that a lot more passive. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we self-manage ours and we have a good system and it's really just, it's not that bad. And we're able to keep that 20 to 40% depending on, you know, what a property manager would charge and that's worth it for us. So definitely some good ways to leverage your time and make it more of a smooth operation. Is there anything in particular you guys have found has been beneficial for you from a management perspective?
You know, I think that mainly it's just that you just find a software system that can be a kind of a centralized source of being able to push out to all the other platforms that you're using. We tend to use OwnerRes, and we like it because it's just it's a robust system and you can tweak it to whatever you need it to do. And I like that a lot of it is automated in terms of triggered messages to your cleaners, to the guests. I can text them messages to the guests. And even if you wanted to, you could even have a website that was based through OR to be able to do that for you. So it's been very helpful in that sense. I mean, there's still things you have to take a look at and keep track of. I use Price Labs for pricing my properties in Tennessee. I don't do it in Colorado mainly because I don't think that they have enough of a market there and that they don't have enough in data that could be accurate enough in order to adjust my rates there. I usually tend to just adjust my rates according to what I know is going to be happening in the area. So Price Labs has been very helpful in the Tennessee market.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did this house do in Pigeon Forge for you?
Oh, yeah. Well, it did really well. Let's see. We try to get, I don't know, we do a gross rent multiplier. And I'll just say in terms of a gross rent multiplier for purchase price to what we generated last year. So the GRM was 3.8. So gross rent 3.8. So that's calculating that if you just take the gross rental income and divide it by the cost. It's the price of the property divided by your gross income. Mm-hmm. So it'll be how much it'll, is that right? That's right.
Yeah, it sounds right. Yeah. So if you grossed 100,000, but your gross rent multiplier is 3.8, then 380,000 ballpark is what you paid for it. Would be how I understand that.
Yes. So yes, let me go back on that. The property that we have and the first property that we have in Pigeon Forge, if you considered gross rent multiplier from last year to our purchase price is 3.8. So it's actually doing quite well. And it may not do as well this year as you may have already seen on social media and also in the news about the Airbnb bust. That's really not accurate, I don't think. We haven't seen that much of a drop, but there will definitely be a little bit of a decrease, I think, for this year.
Yeah, I think Airbnb bust is, it definitely hit the folks who were, you know, taking like their cell phone pictures and had a poorly furnished property. And they were just like, hey, let me just see what happens on Airbnb. I think they're getting hit really hard. I think the folks like you and I who are buying these really great Airbnbs and furnishing them really, really well and offering these unique stays, you know, our property in Colorado specifically, our properties haven't had a dip at all. In fact, we've actually been raising rent. Still are raising the daily rate still. And it's just because that's what Airbnb is really looking for. Those really nice homes, those really unique stays, those Instagrammable properties, they love that. And so I think that is a good opportunity for folks who are looking at getting started. Kind of your cookie cutter home might not do as well at this moment in time, but we'll see. And the markets are cyclical, so we'll see how things go in the future. But yeah, that's a great gross rent multiplier for you and sounds like a great investment property going forward, and I'm sure it'll continue to do well for you. And the Smokies is such a great market. I remember we were looking at buying a house in the Smokies. It was just pre-COVID, 2019 or so. And my business partner and I, Charlie, we were looking And there was a cabin. It was a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, beautiful cabin, great view in the Smokies, for sale for $290,000, maybe $310,000. And we're like, oh, this is too expensive. You know, we're not going to buy this. Yeah. And that's probably, I don't know, $1 million at this point. So hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah. It's the appreciation since 2019 has been phenomenal. Like that property that I told you about, let's see, I would say it has generated, it's increased over double the initial purchase price.
Purchase price. That's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. And that's an example of like, there's so many different ways to make money in real estate. You know, cash flow is one, of course, appreciation, tax benefits, et cetera. Like there's just a lot of different opportunity in real estate. And I think that, you know, kind of figuring out what avenue or how you want to invest and what's important to you is really important. You're really lucky. You hit the jackpot on appreciation, cash flow, et cetera, with this property in Pigeon Forge. And that's where short-term rentals offer some really cool opportunities.
Yeah. And it's been very interesting, and with the COVID and how that happened, and it amazingly, it had, the last couple of years has just been phenomenal in terms of rental income. And I think that's what kind of has caused some people to stumble a little bit as they're purchasing properties now. They're basing their projected income on the last couple of years,
right,
when really that's probably going to be the peak. And now we're talking about recession.
Yeah, certainly from that point. Yeah, I think now we're probably seeing what's more standard for these homes and these Airbnbs in terms of rental income, but still a lot of opportunity that exists there. Have you guys continued to buy in the Smokies?
Yes. Well, we bought in 2019, and then we bought in 2020, and we bought that house just because it was in the same neighborhood as our first house.
Oh,
so
cool.
We knew the area really well. And once it popped up on the market, we were like, okay, that's an easy decision. And that's the nice thing about, if you really know the market that you're working in, once you run the numbers often enough, you can almost just look at something and say, okay, that is going to work. That's going to be a good deal. And so that's the advantage of having that experience, and to be able to run those numbers consistently so that you know what your criteria are and that you can pick out the property right away, because some of those deals don't last very long. So we got that one in 2020, and then we purchased a new build in 2021, which didn't complete until 2022.
Okay.
And then we bought another one at the beginning of 2023, because it was the same builder as our third one. And that one we purchased because someone just decided not to close on it 1 month prior to completion.
Oh, wow.
And it just turned out that we had already had basically a wish list of an ideal property that we wanted. We wanted 5-bedroom. We wanted it to have an indoor pool. And our real estate agent said, hey, do you want this house? Buyer doesn't want it. You have 24 hours to decide. And so luckily we had already run the numbers earlier. And so we knew where we were limited in terms of how much we could offer and what we had in the bank. And so we knew that we could make that purchase, and we went ahead and chose to purchase at that time. It's
very
more
cool
of a long-term play, in that it's actually not going to generate a lot of cash flow at first, just because we bought it retail. There was not any, it was full price. And
yeah.
But we also understand that sometimes you have to do that, because in the future, when you look back, you'll be like, wow, that was a good deal.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like a good deal at the moment, but it's still worth it to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that all too well with the Smoky Mountains. I absolutely wish I bought that house that I talked about earlier, but that's just how things go, and you learn and you go from there and you keep growing. So absolutely. Real quick, I wanted to touch on, so it sounds like Eric, your husband, is involved with investing in real estate with you as well. How would someone get their spouse on board when it comes to investing in real estate?
Well, I think when you think about what your goals are in the future, if you want to be financially independent, you want to have more time, wealth, those kind of things, and if that's a priority for you, then certainly real estate is a way to do that and is a good option. I think we both were at the point at the time when we started investing that we were looking for something as an exit strategy. We were looking for building a lifeboat. And at the time of 2010, obviously, things had crashed. There was a recession. And my husband is in a field where he's video and photography, and the business just dried up. in 2010. And so he had spare time on his hands. And that's why when we purchased properties, they were not in the greatest shape at the time. And so he did a lot of the renovations for that and handled a lot of the just arranging for the contractors, and because we needed to put some sweat equity into it. And so I think we both were on the same page at that time as this needs to get done. This needs to happen. And we're going to work through whatever it is we need to work through. And, you know, there's some bumps in the road, but we always know what our goals are in the end and what we're willing to put up with to get there.
Yeah, that's great. I think sharing that vision together, the kind of that vivid vision of what we want the future to look like is really important. So you guys are both running after those same goals and those goals are aligned. It's super beneficial. Sounds like you guys are a great team as well. And it also sounds like you're developing a short-term rental investing course. Is that correct?
Yes, we are actually recording it. And we actually did a module today, and it was actually on partner alignment and about mindset, which is funny that you should ask about that. And, you know, sometimes we don't always agree. I mean, one time there was a house that he liked and he was talking about, he wanted to purchase it. He thought it'd be a pretty great deal as long as we could have a pool built in addition to the new construction. And I was just like, no, I don't want to do that. That's too much of a hassle. And that time we didn't agree. But in general, we do pretty well. And I think it helps. It plays a different role than I play in this whole thing. I'm usually the tech and I'm on the back end and I kind of handle emails and messaging that is automatic, the automation of things. And he is more of the handling of the maintenance. I'm talking to vendors. And especially he is very good at dealing with customers, with our guests. And so I sometimes don't have the patience for that. And so it's better for him to do that instead of me saying, no, you can't have that. Which he's always like, well, let's see what we can do.
Yeah. Well, it's probably nice for anesthesia. You could just put them to sleep when they started to ask all those questions.
Sure.
So
right. It's time to go to sleep now.
Exactly. Well, cool. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you guys have very complementary skill sets where he's better at some things than you are, and you're better at some things than he is, and you're able to put those talents together and really excel. Well, I'm excited to hear about that investing course in the future and see how that goes. I'm sure it'll be a great opportunity for folks going forward.
Thanks, Alex. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm hoping that it'll be done. We're supposed to finish the modules by the end of Q3.
Okay.
So that's all about the planning and goal setting and such, and then hopefully just get it launched before the new year.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, something else big is happening in the new year for you, correct? Starting per diem.
Yes. Yes.
Congratulations.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. I keep talking about financial freedom and how we've achieved it. And the reality is I just haven't been able to get away as much as I would like. And I decided to turn in my notice. I have to give 6 months notice. And so in January 2024, I'm just going to go per diem and be able to work whenever I want and be able to take vacation whenever I want. I don't
That's
necessarily
awesome.
Think I'm going to work a lot less, but it's just going to be able to have that flexibility is really important to me. And yeah, there's just been some changes in my mindset this year. There's a book I read. It's called Die with Zero. It just really, really made me think about what's important and how I want to make my bucket list and how I want to arrange my life in order to be able to get all the things I want to get done in the time I need, in the time I have. So I highly recommend it. It really made me think.
Yeah, it's on my list. You're probably the fourth or fifth person in the last couple of weeks that have recommended that book to me. And I love to read. So I'm definitely going to have to read that, Die with Zero. Looking forward to it. Yeah, I think so. You know, in America, we've kind of been brainwashed, if you will, to retire at 65. And that's when you start your bucket list and retire at 65, frankly, if you're lucky. And gosh, I mean, why not conquer your bucket list now when you're younger and can do it with your kids and with your family and enjoy it and do whatever you want to do. So I'm really excited for you going forward and switching to per diem and having that flexibility. And it's really cool to see how real estate has given you guys that flexibility to do that as well. So thanks for sharing that. That's really inspiring. Yeah. Well, before we wrap things up, I want to be respectful of your time. And I know there's modules to record for the course. Is there one last piece of advice you'd give a new attending or a new doc who's just getting started and wanting to get started investing in real estate?
You know, I think sometimes I see comments or posts about people who can't possibly do that, or I wish I was where you were, or I you're so lucky that you get to be where you are. And the reality is it has to do with understanding that mindset, that you can do it. You just have to spend some time and work on it and just get educated, build that foundation and just run the numbers and really take that chance. Because I think once you start doing something, you'll get the hang of it and you'll understand what you're doing. And that also, even with some failures, you're still going to learn something from that. And then it'll just help you be more successful in the future. And I feel like sometimes we think have more of a scarcity mindset. And that's not possible for me because I'm too busy doing medicine or whatever it is. But some of that just has, you have to take the time and look at it and just go for it. And you can't achieve it. And it isn't an instant millionaire process. I mean, it's a get rich slow proposition. And you have to also understand that and be patient with it and let time and compounding, just like in the stock market, you have to let that work. And so you do have to get started. And the sooner you start, the better off you're going to be in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the best time to buy a house or buy real estate was 10 years ago, but is also right now. So absolutely, just get started. Well, that's great advice. If folks want to learn more about you, what you guys are doing, is there a way they can reach out to you and get a hold of you?
Yeah, we do have a real estate account. It's called Winning with REI. And then, like I said, we'll also post eventually on when that STR course is done. So I'm looking forward to getting that out and having people learn more about real estate.
Absolutely. Well, that's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time. It was great chatting with you tonight.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity, Alex.
Thank you. Well, with that, it's been Jellery and Alex with another episode of the Physicians and Properties podcast, signing off. Hey, real quick, if you're still listening to this, I'm assuming you got value from it. So I need your help specifically. My 2-year vision with this podcast is to help 100,000 physicians learn how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want. There are 2 main ways that a podcast grows. One is through ratings and reviews, and the other is word of mouth. If you can please leave me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as send this to 1 to 2 friends that you think would get value from it, we can reach the physicians that we want to reach. Thanks in advance, and talk to you on the next episode.
Please note that the information shared on this podcast is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered financial or medical advice. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the host and the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Department of Defense or the United States Air Force.